will be discussing the details of various schemes and how companies can and cannot avail of this support. So, but bear in mind, the schemes are being updated sometimes on a daily basis. So do keep visiting the Catalyst website, where we will be keeping all the relevant information up to date and succinct as possible. Just to start the ball rolling, I'm now going to hand over to Andrew Reid and Gary Borland from KPMG. And guys, I'll let you guys introduce yourself as well. And I'm running the slideshow, so when you're ready to switch slides, just let me know and I'll switch slides.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, John. And again, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this webinar, which will look to highlight a number of the financial support interventions which have been announced in recent days in response to these unprecedented times. My name is Gary Borland. I'm a director within the Deal Advisory Team at KPMG in Belfast, and I'm joined today by Andrew Reid, who is a director in our tax team, and you'll hear a little bit more from Andrew later on. Just to reiterate a point that John made, the speed of the announcements that have been announced over the last number of days have brought their own challenges in terms of detail emerges on a daily basis, and some of that detail is yet to follow. Resourcing issues within those tasks with delivering them will pose a challenge, and the ability to implement them will also mean that patience is going to be required here, and that's easier said than done. I appreciate that. But it's important to remember that, you know, some of these initiatives are probably some of the most generous initiatives or schemes announced by any government to date, and that's speaking on a global basis. First of all, I want to look at this from my perspective. So my background is more so in corporate finance and in restructuring. So what I want to look at is the cash flow considerations to bear in mind in the current environment, and also some of the new financial packages that have been announced to date. And those packages are by and large this £330 billion headline number that's been thrown about. And then second of all, I'm going to pass over to Andrew, who will outline some of the measures announced by HMRC in an effort to assist businesses of all sizes. And then, as John said, we'll be joined by the wider panel for a further discussion. So if we just begin with some of the cash flow considerations just on the next slide, John, which all businesses will be impacted to some degree at this point in time, but it's important to remember that not all businesses will be impacted in the same way. Some businesses may show very little impact, and some, such as in the hospitality trade, are suffering quite catastrophic consequences at the moment. The first thing that I would suggest is that, you know, it's very important to understand your existing funding requirement as it has emerged over the last number of days, and to do that as quickly as possible. But also do that in the context of your existing facilities, be they bank facility or be they other funders, and then look at what alternative funding sources might be available to your business depending on size and scale and stage of growth. Another important thing is to obviously act decisively and act quickly. Don't ignore the current financial position. And obviously the speed at which you need to respond is being dictated by practical matters as much as by legal and by financial matters at this point in time. Another very important thing to remember is to take advice. Lots of this is evolving. Lots of it's evolving quickly. But take advice from your funder, accountant, lawyer, your angel, your NEDs, or even an insolvency practitioner if it gets to that point. The other thing to remember is to keep that position under review on a continual basis. Very important to hold regular informed board meetings. Make sure that those are recorded in a documentary fashion. Make sure proper minutes are kept to rationalise your decisions, particularly if you're going to be taking on new funding or new creditors. And that comes on to the final point around director's duties. But also, you'll be aware that there are options available. There are options available in terms of funding sources. There are obviously new schemes having been announced over the last number of days. There were the existing schemes that are already there and have been there, and that will continue to evolve. And also legal options are something to be constantly aware of, and both in terms of funding, but also in terms of your duties, in terms of what arrangements you can make with creditors, with employees, for instance. And that's been very prevalent over the last number of days. Lastly, then, just to flag that whilst the world is moving very quickly around us and while things continue to evolve, it's also very important to remember that you have and will continue to have director's duties, and that those duties and your conduct will be in sharper focus now over the coming weeks and months. So if we could just now turn to look at some of the announcements that have been made in terms of support packages over the last, really over the last 7 days. I want to look at a couple just on the next slide that cover off both from an NI perspective and also then some of the more broad packages that apply across the whole of the UK. So from a local NI perspective, there have been two grant schemes announced to date. There's the COVID Small Business Grant Scheme that offers £10,000 to small businesses. And there's also a hospitality, tourism and retail sector scheme that offers grants of £25,000. Both of those schemes are dependent on rateable value, and both of those schemes can be accessed through links on the InvestNI website that take you through to a Department for the Economy application process. And those are already live and are open for applications at this moment. The next one I want to touch upon from a cash perspective or a cash flow perspective, business rates have been waived for the 3 month period from April to June 2020. And also then the assessments for the current year, for the new financial year, the 2021 year, have been deferred for a period of time, and those are not expected to come out until June of this year. That in some ways may be a small incentive or a small support package, but for certain businesses, again, it can become a fairly material number. There's also been a number of HMRC initiatives, and you know, they are prevalent and very relevant to cash flow in terms of cash flow management. I'm not going to touch upon those, but I'm going to let Andrew touch on those in some detail in a couple of moments. The two schemes then that have got most of the headline, in fact, all of the headlines, are these two loan schemes, and that's important, loan schemes. These are not grants. These are debt products. But these two schemes being the COVID Business Interruption Loan Scheme and the COVID Corporate Financing Facility. Both of these have been announced. I think they've been broadly welcomed. However, they have brought with them a lot of uncertainty in terms of where do I go, where do I start, how do they apply to me? And that detail has taken a little bit of time and probably will continue to take a little bit of time to develop as the announcement goes into implementation, goes into actual practical application, and the outworkings of that actually with the financial institution. The COVID Business Interruption Loan Scheme has, you know, what detail is available at the moment is through the British Business Bank, and we have a member on the panel that can talk a little bit more about that later on. But the first port of call for these is with a financial institution. And there are accredited lenders who are able to work within this scheme. And again, I think we have a representative of one of those institutions coming up later on. But just to reiterate, this is not a grant. This is a loan scheme. It's available for businesses with turnover up to £45 million. And what the difference here is that you have a government guarantee of facilities. It's not a government handout, and they will guarantee 80% of any new facility entered into where that facility is up to £5 million. Now, there's a range of facilities, be they term loans, be they invoice discount facilities, be they asset-backed lending. It covers a range of facilities. But, and again, we'll touch upon this later on in the panel, the viability of the business prior to the crisis is fundamental to being part of this scheme. If a business was able to show that it could maintain or take on new debt, so if it had a valid or viable borrowing proposal prior to the crisis, this will be something that can be looked at under the scheme. But if that wasn't the case then, it won't be the case now. So I think it'll be unlikely to be appropriate for a number of startups. And there may well be exceptions to that, but I think it'll be primarily for trading businesses, as I say, up to that level of 45 million turnover. For completeness, I'm mentioning the COVID Corporate Financing Facility. But again, this is really designed towards investment-grade companies. And yes, there's detail emerging around, well, what is an investment-grade company? How do I get access to a credit rating, for instance? And that is given the perception of a gap between the two schemes. But I think that's something that will maybe become a bit clearer over the next few weeks. The last point I wanted to make, and this is probably, you know, this is not a new one, existing funders and finance providers, but it's very important to remember that I think every bank, every funder has in the last number of days come up with their own mechanism to support their existing customers and existing borrowers, be it through moratoriums, be it through extensions of facilities, be it through new facilities, be it through flexibility on covenants. And I think it's important not to forget about those providers and the approach by those lenders, because you know they have had to react quickly with all the challenges that come with working remotely and people needing to be out of the office. But I think they have shown a pragmatic approach thus far. Each will have their own view on what that means. But I think even before you get to the new schemes, it's important to remember that your existing funder or existing finance provider should be your first port of call. I'm just going to hand over now to Andrew to give us a quick introduction of himself and to look at some of the HMRC initiatives that have been announced again, evolving over the last couple of days. Andrew?
Thanks, Gary. Thanks. Thanks, everyone, for joining these unprecedented times. These are very, very difficult for businesses, obviously, at the minute, but I hope everyone's keeping well and doing their very best to keep their families and their employees safe as well. My name's Andrew Reid. I'm one of the directors in the tax practice at KPMG in Belfast. Day to day, I would be dealing with business tax affairs, but obviously at the minute, it's kind of all hands to the pump, just trying to help our clients as best we can through this situation. We just thought, in terms of some of the guidance and the measures that have been introduced, we'll just talk around those a little bit and obviously give you a little bit of insight as to how things are moving at the minute. Obviously, as Gary mentioned, a bit of a word of warning, these things are accelerating so fast. The guidance and legislation is obviously a little bit slow to keep up with everything, so we'll do our very best, but I think we just need to be a little bit patient, certainly with HMRC and the government obviously at the minute as well. So we'll do our best to explain what's happening. So four main things I was going to just mention today, just talk around a little bit around planning. This is not aggressive tax planning, just planning for the business generally. Talk about some of the deferral routes for your tax liabilities that may be appropriate. Thinking about some other things that we could potentially do to accelerate tax benefits. And then finally, just talk about the support measures that were mentioned and guidance actually issued last night. So on to the next slide, please, John. So just thinking about planning, I mean, obviously, everyone will be doing this anyway, as a matter of course, thinking about your business and your cash inflows and outflows. But it's just very important not to forget the tax inflows and outflows as well. As we know, obviously, a lot of people will be facing severe liabilities with their employer's taxes, VAT, national insurance, etc. And if you're thinking about entering into any of the deferral schemes, just need to be aware that these are only timing issues. So they're not writing off liabilities at the minute. And the revenue will and probably will still try to enforce any liabilities that are going to be deferred. Just a couple of points then. I mean, obviously, as you know, you don't need to be an economist to work out that massive increase in public spending is going to have to be paid for in time. So I would certainly be thinking about some of these allowances might be affected and reduced or abolished altogether. And we're likely to see some increases in tax rates as well as things progress over the next 12, 18 months and beyond. I would just say, think about some of the opportunities that you might have with the business at the minute. Obviously, we're coming to the end of the tax year, so just think about any of the things that you might want to be doing now, especially with any reduced allowances and increased rates coming down the track. I've just added a postscript there. Brexit hasn't gone away. Still going to progress, albeit potentially more slowly. So we're not entirely sure what that's going to mean for the transitional period and obviously the future relationships as well, but we'll just need to keep that in the back of our minds. So on to the deferral mechanisms then. So the main one that was introduced, and say the revenue have done a good job, and the Chancellor has done a great job in actually trying to bring these things forward as quickly as possible. So on the VAT side of things, any UK VAT registered businesses with a VAT payment due between 20th of March 2020 and 30th of June 2020 can automatically defer that payment. Still have to submit your returns as and when they're due. You don't need to claim the deferral as such, and there won't be any interest or penalties if you don't pay the VAT that's due. But if the option's taken, you'll have to meet that liability by 31 March 2021. So I suppose it means you can continue with your fees and invoicing practices at the minute, and hopefully your customers are able to pay. It just means that you won't need to pay that liability across to people. There's another couple of schemes that are introduced as well. So there's a deferral of the income tax payment on account that's going to be due coming due in July. That's going to be deferred onto January now. That's not just self-employed folk. So that might be a directors or anyone else that's receiving other sorts of income as well that is expecting to make an income tax payment in the middle of July. And I mentioned that the IR35 rules. So they, if you know about them, well, you should do. They're fairly complicated rules, but hopefully anyone that thinks they may be applicable should really know about these rules. But thankfully, they've actually been, the introduction is going to be deferred potentially for another year. So it's just something to think about in terms of employment status for certain individuals and contractors. On the other side of things, and covering more general taxes, there hasn't been anything specific announced for things like employment taxes and corporation tax, but there is an existing scheme called the time to pay arrangements. This is a mechanism that effectively means you can contact the revenue if you're in financial distress and you think you won't be able to meet a tax payment. Now, obviously, again, unprecedented times, so the revenue are doing their very best to cope with anyone actually applying for these schemes. They've tried to set up a new network and that includes additional staffing to support any claims. These kind of things are generally seen as the last resort. So the revenue will have expected you to have a look at other funding mechanisms first before you enter into one of these arrangements. But effectively, it would mean that you can defer out some of your payments or potentially pay any liabilities over a longer space of time. I was having a look last night, and I think the revenue have had something like 17 or 18,000 applications so far for time to pay arrangements. So they're trying to deal with these as quickly as possible. But I think you should, if you are thinking about these kind of steps, you should be looking at things that maybe you've already missed or things that are upcoming in the next couple of weeks. I wouldn't be too worried about future payments, say in months down the line, and the revenue do state that you should contact them closer to the time to get some support. So there's a couple of links there, and hopefully with the slides will be shared, you can have a look at some of those mechanisms yourself. And then on to the next slide then. So we're just thinking about some of the other things that can be positive for cash flow. And this is mainly business taxes, so corporation tax that we're thinking about. So obviously a lot of people's turnovers and profits are likely to be hit in the coming months as a result of the situation. So if you do have a historically profitable business that makes a loss in the current year, you might think about potentially accelerating your timelines and trying to get a claim in. You can surrender a current year loss back against your prior year profits and obtain a corporation tax credit for that, so you get the cash back. You'll need to think about the interaction with R&D claims. I know there'll be a lot of people out there that will be submitting R&D claims. So we just need to think about interaction. If you've already surrendered losses away for a cash credit, those losses are gone. But leading into the R&D tax credit claims, obviously this is going to be a fantastic opportunity to try and get some cash back. So think about when you're undertaking R&D activities, or you have done for the previous financial period, think about bringing forward your compliance processes. So get your financial statements done, get your corporation tax computations done and your R&D claims done as soon as possible, and try and get those submitted. Now the revenue had intended to bring in a cap on the maximum cash credit that could be paid out under the SME R&D tax credit scheme. That cap was meant to be brought in April 2020, but it's actually going to be pushed out. They're meant to be consulting on the measure, so we'll just have to see exactly when that's going to be brought in, but I can't exactly see it being in the very near future. We were in contact with the Revenue yesterday, actually, about processing times for R&D tax credit claims. They're obviously expecting an increased number, and obviously in the next couple of months, we're going to see a massive increase as well, I suspect. So they are still going to try and process claims within 4 weeks and hopefully pay out cash within 2 weeks of processing. So just bear that in mind. That's fairly consistent with how things had been historically. Obviously, there was a bit of a glitch last year and there was a lot of delays that we noted, but the Revenue, they've allocated additional resources to processing these claims. So hopefully they'll be able to make these payments as soon as possible. One point I would make is it's quite a tricky area, but dealing with grants and grant funding around your eligibility for R&D tax credits. So just think about, particularly if you're going down the furlough route, it looks like that scheme is going to be a notified state aid, and the UK government is going to have to let the EU Commission know about that, which could have a severe impact on the R&D tax credits on the underlying expenditure. So just need to have a think about that and how the whole thing operates together. Now, obviously, we'll come to talk about these furlough workers in the next slide, and they shouldn't be working for you, obviously, so they shouldn't be doing any R&D. But you may just need to think about siloing those people off if their wages and salaries are going to be met by HMRC. So just on the next slide then, please, John. So the job retention scheme obviously was brought in fairly swiftly. It was announced last week and additional guidance was released last night actually as well. So this scheme's effectively means the Revenue are going to assist you with payment of your wages and salaries for the next 3 months. So starting 1 March 2020 through the 30th of June 2020. And effectively what this means is if your business is severely affected as a result of the coronavirus situation, you can bench your workers, keep them on your payroll, so you can avoid any unnecessary redundancies. But it means you can put these people in furlough status and they won't be able to work for the business, but the Revenue will actually pay you a grant equal to 80% of their monthly salary up to maximum cap of 2,500, and that's a per month per employee basis. So if you think about it, if these people can't work for you at the minute because reduced demand for your services, you can apply for this furlough status. There's going to be a portal set up which you can file your claim with the Revenue. So you can get the cash back, and obviously you'll just keep those people on the payroll as normal. You don't need to top up the payment of the salaries. So if the Revenue are giving you the 80%, you don't need to make the additional 20% payment to them. And actually the scheme is going to also cover your employer's NIC and auto enrollment pension contributions. So actually the maximum cash that you'll probably get is closer to 2,900 per employee per month if they're at that cap limit. In terms of the actual tax status of that grant, it will be a taxable receipt for the business, but also for the employee. So the income tax and the NIC liabilities continue as normal for those individuals. As I said, the scheme's going to initially run from 1st of March 2020 through the 30th of June 2020, and we're going to have a look to see whether that needs to be extended at that time. Now, again, try to be patient with these kind of things. This is an absolute massive intervention. So the Revenue are trying to set up a scheme and a portal to deal with all these claims. They expect people to be able to make claims three weekly, and the three-week period will align to the furlough period. So if you're putting an employee on furlough, they have to stay on that furlough status for a minimum of 3 weeks. And then the Revenue are expecting you to be able to make your grant claims for every 3 week period then for those individuals. Now it's going to be applicable for anyone who's on your payroll as at 28th of February 2020. And we would just, I suppose, a word of warning with these kind of things, and hopefully everyone's going to operate within the spirit of this intervention. But I would absolutely be expecting the Revenue to take a close look at these kind of things to make sure that you're not employing people putting them in furlough and then still using them. So you might have an HMRC audit further down the track. Obviously, I wouldn't worry about that if you're using the scheme in the way it was meant to be intended. But certainly just to bear in mind that we just need to think about keeping proper records and making sure that anyone's on furlough status stays there. Now, they are allowed to undertake training for the business or for any other business purposes, but they just can't be involved in any revenue producing activities. Now, in terms of the salaries and the wages that are going to be met by this grant, it is going to be your normal wages salaries. As I said, national insurance, pension as well, but it's not going to cover things like commissions and bonuses and dividends that will be payable to shareholders also will not be covered. There is then, I think these kind of things that they're expecting this thing by the end of April, there's going to be a special portal set up. So hopefully that'll be as soon as possible. But we just need to think about that the payments of cash might not be made available until maybe May or June time. So there were a couple of other measures. Gary obviously talked about the couple of grants that's going to be available and the business rates relief as well. There's also a support mechanism for businesses paying statutory sick pay to employees. And you may have seen then last night, obviously the Chancellor announced some further support, which is reasonably closely aligned to the job retention scheme. And that's going to be for self-employed workers. Now, as I said, that's not going to cover small company businesses and director shareholders per se, because obviously they are employed by the business. But this is more for people who work independently, so your contractors and consultants. I think one last thing I just wanted to mention then was that actually there won't be an interaction between the national minimum wage, the national living wage, and this grant scheme because the people actually won't be working. So potentially the 80% might take them below the national thresholds, but that won't be a consideration. So I think that was pretty much all that we were going to talk about for now. So probably on to the panel for now.
Yeah. Firstly, Andrew and Carrie, thanks very, very much for actually putting this together and talking us through that. There was a lot of very useful information in there. People have started post questions already. But one observation from one of the attendees was around the VAT payments. Apparently, there was an email sent this morning saying if you have VAT payments set up by direct debit, you need to cancel those. Otherwise, HMRC will take that as you actually do want to pay them.
Yeah, that's right, John. Certainly, actually, the revenue being very good with that, and that was one of the suggestions made by them, that actually, yes, you cancel all your direct debits unless you want the money coming out, obviously.
Okay, great. So if I could ask go back to the panel members and just ask you guys if you could sort of introduce yourself to the attendees. And I'm just going to work left to right as I see you guys on the screen. So Aisling, you're the first.
Hi everybody, I'm Aisling, an employment lawyer with Cleaver Foot and Rankin Solicitors. So happy to take any queries on the operation of the job retention scheme and the self-employed contractor scheme.
Okay, Michael, you're up next.
Good afternoon everyone, my name is Michael Black. I'm a board member and CFO of a number of local companies in the startup tech sector where I've worked for over 20 years. In that time, I've had the good fortune, if you like, to work through, first of all, the dot-com crash, and secondly, the economic crash of 08, 09. So I have some experience and scars of dealing with crisis. I also chair the frameworks panel within Catalyst.
Robert.
Yeah, thanks, John. Good afternoon, folks. I'm a bit like Michael. I've been about this while, and I've been through a number of these crises, unfortunately. And this one, I think, is particularly unprecedented. My position at the moment, I was head of Danske Bank's Belfast Business Centre, and I've now moved over to looking after the business sector engagement. So happy to try and help out with any queries that folks may have around access to finance and how to deal with the bank. So we'll probably move on to that at some stage later on. Thank you.
And Susan?
Hi everyone, Susan Nightingale, I'm Senior Manager for Northern Ireland as part of the British Business Bank. So happy to cover off any queries that on the table scheme that come up today.
And last but certainly not least, Carolyn.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Rooney, Financial Controller at Catalyst. I've worked in the small, medium enterprise businesses in the past, and I'm feeling the same pain as everyone else as Financial Controller in this organization as well.
Okay, so guys, as you can imagine, there are a lot of questions coming through. So just while I sort through those, and I will talk about them live over the webinar so we can get those answered. Michael, maybe you could kick off first, talk a little bit about the importance of utilizing the board and leadership, not just in terms of analyzing various scenarios currently, but also looking forward after this event finishes.
Yeah, John, happy to make a few remarks in that regard. Quite clearly, all businesses are reacting and having to react to current circumstances very, very rapidly. And while that is crucially important, of course, I think particularly for the community within Northern Ireland and the community within the Catalyst group, who are largely early stage tech companies, I think perhaps not this week or next week, but very soon those businesses need to start to completely rewrite their business plan for the medium to long term. By all means, focus on accessing where possible the sources of support that the guys from KPMG have just outlined, but fundamentally they are of a short-term nature. They're not going to solve the problem for many of Northern Ireland's emerging tech startup cluster. Those business plans, boards need to help chief executives and management teams rewrite those business plans. Those business plans need to be cast in the light of the likely economic scenario post the current crisis. So post, say, the 30th of June, when the world starts to return to normal, boards are going to have to help their management teams figure out how are their markets going to react and respond and come back? How quickly will they come back? What does that do to future revenue forecasts that in a business plan, even 3 or 4 weeks ago, looked totally credible, now is probably not realistic in the light of what's going to come in the years that follow the end of the immediate pain? So that's probably the area I think where boards need to help chief executives and management teams, especially young management teams, really start to think about and then get into dialogue with either their shareholders, their venture capital backers, or whoever it might be, to get a funding plan in place for the longer term. I'm quite concerned that a number of businesses I'm observing and working with real time right now are really only focused on the next 2 to 3 months. And while that is obviously crucial for immediate term survival, there has to be resource and thought put into what does the longer term business plan look like and what funding is the business going to need to realize those original objectives. You can't, I think, over communicate with your stakeholders, especially your employees. Your employees are feeling pain as equally as everyone on this call. And you can't over communicate with your shareholders. Get them actively involved in those discussions as quickly as possible, because they themselves as investors will have nervousness and may take a period of time to come to conclusions. So start thinking about the longer term after the immediate term reactions. The short term government interventions, while exceptionally helpful, possibly the furlough support scheme for small startup tech, but the longer term picture is vitally important and attention paid to it can't be left much longer.
Great, thank you. Really good advice, Michael. If I could just turn to Carolyn Rooney. Carolyn, a lot of talk about R&D tax credits and how those might be utilised to get cash in the short term. Can you talk us a little bit through timescales for those? I guess the question that a full set of accounts is required to actually get those released. Just talk us through some of the idiosyncrasies of how people might be able to use those in the short term.
Yeah, that's correct. We've been talking a bit about this in the last few days with a few people. And I think it is that balance between, yes, you would have to do a year end, get a set of accounts and file your R&D tax credit with your corporation tax return. You know, that there's a lot in there, and given the current circumstances where we are, you know, it will depend from company to company how ready people are to do that, able to do that. However, they do have the option if they want to shorten their year and start closing everything now and to be able to produce all of that, they can do. And as Andrew quite rightly said, the R&D tax credit regime is one of the quicker get through and get to funds. Historically always has been, apart from the glitch last year, and from what Andrew is saying is continuing to be the case even now. So it's whether you can do that for those who are at year end or have passed year end and are in the process of doing that. It is a very good opportunity to tie that all up, get that all submitted, and hopefully generate some revenue down the line. At least you know it's coming, it will be there at some point. And having waited for them in the past myself, it's amazing how quickly that money comes, and it always seems to come just at the right moment. So it's really important. And as Andrew touched on a little bit yesterday, was they have unofficially said possibly less checking at this stage to get them through, but there will be checking afterwards, so just bear all that in mind.
Okay, thank you, Carolyn. I'm going to tackle two more subjects which have come up again and again and again, and then we're going to jump into the actual Q&A. So there's a number of questions online being posed. I think first one, maybe Susan, you could address this. If you could just elaborate a little bit about the loan scheme and how it differs from the EFG.
Sure. The CBILS we're all very familiar with went open for applications on the 23rd, so just this week, and it's being delivered on the ground by currently 40 plus accredited lenders. So just in terms of the key features, provides facilities of up to 5 million for smaller businesses with turnover less than 45 million experiencing any disruptions to their cash flow. That 5 million is against a previous limit of 1.2 million under EFG. In terms of repayment terms, facilities can be repaid up to 6 years. It's an 80% guarantee to the lenders, that was previously 75% under EFG. A key feature of it, which really does make it more attractive for the smaller businesses to access it, is that there's now no guarantee there's no guarantee payment. That was previously 2% under the EFG scheme. So that does make it substantially more attractive for the small businesses. And again, another key feature is the business interruption payment, which basically the government will cover the interest for the first 12 months and any lender levied fees within that same period. So that again makes it very much attractive to the businesses. From a security point of view, just touch on that, because there's a lot of press around this at the moment, particularly around the PG aspect. It is at the discretion of the individual lenders whether for the scheme to be used for unsecured lending for facilities sub 250k. For the facilities above 250k, the scheme does actually require that the lenders establish a lack or absence of security prior to actually using the scheme. And I suppose it take this opportunity just to emphasise as well that if the lenders can offer finance on their normal commercial terms without the need to make use of the CBILS scheme, then that they are obliged to do so. And then just finally would be the viability point. And Gary did touch on this earlier, the scheme is open to businesses that were displaying sustainable profitability and cash generative pre the coronavirus crisis. So, there is that question mark, and the lenders are fending that at the moment.
Okay, Susan, thank you. I think one of the other questions I've heard posed a lot over the last couple of days, maybe address this to Aisling, is because of KPMG mentioned as well, is all around furloughing and the requirements around that. And firstly, the fact that we're now at the end of March, so there's probably only April and May left to do that in any case. But especially for the smaller tech companies and those who are involved in software, there was lots of questions about, the ability of anybody to actually do some work from home in terms of writing code or whatever. I don't know if you can address that for us, Susan.
Aisling. Yeah, the scheme provides that you can undertake training,
but it is limited in that there's a caveat that you can't provide any services or generate revenue. So if you're doing work that could be considered to be providing services to the employer, I think there's an issue in relation to that. It's really designed so that employees aren't carrying out any work whatsoever for the employer.
Okay. So I'm going to jump to the questions here because there are quite a number and run through many of those. So what the first one up here is around the hospitality and tourism grant. And obviously it's sort of a no-brainer when you look at the sort of the front, the pointy end people in terms of the hoteliers and restaurants. But there are quite a number of our tech companies who are supplying products to those who are affected 100% by what has happened to the direct hotels and restaurants and bars. Are they able to claim against some of the grants that are available for those guys? Maybe that's one for KPMG, Gary or Andrew.
John, it's going to come down to how you're assessed for rates. So I think LPS will have your categorization or will have you classified as a particular business type. So I think if you fall within that, I would expect that to be the first port of call. But again, these things are evolving all the time. And people who can argue that they're involved in hospitality might need to have a new classification applied to them. So it's not a straightforward answer, I believe. But I would suggest that it's going to start first and foremost with how you're categorized as a business.
Okay. And just on that, obviously the grants are subject to what the rateable value is. Just for clarity, what is the limit, either lower or upper?
There are two different schemes here. So the upper limit for the 25 grand, and I'll defer to Andrew maybe for the detail on this, but for the 25 grand hospitality one, the rateable value, I think, is up to 50 grand, Andrew, is that correct?
51.
And I know that the small grant, I think, is much lower than that. I think the rateable value there is up to 15,000.
Okay. And then I'm sure there's a number of our the attendees are probably not working from their own offices, but potentially either renting desks and you know, hot desking spaces or co-working spaces or have a part of an office. Is there any way that those people can avail of any of this?
I think if you're not rateable, you're going to struggle to qualify for the grant. I think you, as far as LPS is concerned, it will be the landlord, it will be the owner, and it'll be the person who's subject to rates will be the person first and foremost. So I'm not sure people who rent a desk or rent an office and pay amount will find it easy to access that grant, certainly based on what I've seen thus far.
Okay. So I would say for anybody that's listening in or watching, if there are any questions that you have up here that we don't get answered fully, please feel free to email or contact your Catalyst contact, or if you haven't got one, shoot us an email at community@wearecatalyst.org. Just another one on the rates, Gary, was that somebody has just moved into their own rented premises but haven't actually paid a rates bill yet. Are they still eligible?
Well, again, I think it'll come down to when did they move in? Are they going to be rateable for, you know, the 1920 year? That's the current year that we're in. So I suspect that what will happen there is that it will be more difficult, but as in they'll have to prove when they moved in, when they were subject to rates. But because, you know, the rating value is the threshold here, I think unless you have an assessment for rates for the 2019-2020 year, I think that'll be difficult. I'm not saying it will be impossible to get it, but it just might mean a bit of a delay in being able to make your application. But if you're in premises and are liable for the rates, I would have thought that that's, you know, that's the first hurdle to get over here.
Okay, and there's also a particular question in here about small companies and in terms of the grant scheme who are, you know, renting space within the Catalyst buildings. So I would suggest if you haven't done already, shoot an email directly to property, and we will get answers to you as quickly as possible on that. If you haven't done already, I know some of you have, because I've been chatting with the property guys already. Next one is VAT returns for quarter ended 30 this quarter are due to be filed early May. Company's accounts teams are furloughed to the 31st of May. Will HMRC permit late filing in these circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really comes down to whether it's the argument that you have to make for the reason for late filing. So the revenue will expect all your returns to be up to date as per usual. But if you have extenuating circumstances, obviously due to the current situation, you might be able to rely on that to try and mitigate any fines or penalties. But I think the advice would be try to keep things up to date as best you can.
Okay. Another specific one here on the 25 gig grant for hospitality and tourism. I think, Gary, you mentioned that the applications are available through the InvestNow website. The InvestNow website links to NI Business info, which says further details will follow. Any comments on that? Or where do they apply, like right now?
I did see that question, and I've actually checked online whilst we've been on, and that is indeed the case, which has made a liar out of me. I was getting directed to a link yesterday, so I'm hoping that's a technical problem. I know the other scheme certainly is live, because I've double-checked that one as well to make sure. Apologies for that one, folks.
Maybe, John, just to make a comment that might be helpful for the hospitality and tourism people. I have some involvement in that sector myself. I think the local councils are going to be the touch point for best information. I know certainly ABC down in Craigavon area are issuing daily updates to everybody in that locale about what's happening. And those are coming out even without needing to be asked for. They're actually very good. There's a daily update on all the schemes that they're sending to all their businesses in the hospitality and tourism sector. So maybe going to the local council might be a useful starting point also.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. Another question back to the furloughing question again. So if we're offering services for free, that was back to, I think, Ashling's point about not generating revenue. So if we're offering services for free, does that still apply that the staff who are furloughed at home can't contribute?
I think you're still stuck because the wording is providing services or generating revenue. So even though you might be providing the services for free, you're still providing services, and that's an exclusion then under the terms of the scheme, unfortunately.
Okay. I started my first employee on 23rd of March who can't work now for parental caring reasons. I really want to pay her something while she can't work. Are there any options open to me? And I think there were another couple of questions on there about if people were now working part-time rather than full-time, were there any options open to them as well? So if anybody can answer any of those, it would be great.
Yeah, it's sort of furloughs. The job retention scheme is all or nothing. So unfortunately, it doesn't cover the likes of short-time working. You know, where you have somebody working reduced hours, the employer then can't avail of the job retention scheme grant, which seems a little bit crazy, but that's the way it's been worded by the government.
Okay.
John,
go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, I was just going to say they have to be on the payroll 28th of Feb as well. Right. So for that particular case. Yeah.
Okay. There's, as you can imagine, there's quite a few questions there. So I sort of want to capture maybe some, a lot of them and add them to summarize them, if you like. There's another one on, so we have an employee on furlough right now. They're actually on holiday over the Easter period, and then we intend to put them back on furlough afterwards. How does that work, or will it work?
Furlough, technically you're supposed to be, 3 weeks on a furlough period. So could they be asked maybe to change the holiday plans so that they remain on furlough? It possibly makes more sense to do that, because otherwise you won't be able to recover the monies that you pay for annual leave.
Okay. And I think we're still on the same subject, but is the job protection scheme applicable to the construction sector?
no express exclusions in relation to the sector available to all businesses, as far as I know.
Okay. So we're talking a little bit about back to the banking stuff now. My understanding is the banks are looking for full personal guarantees for the loan scheme. Do you think this will be reconsidered? So I think we'll hand over to maybe Danske Bank, kick off with that one.
Yeah, I can cover that, hopefully, John. It's a very good point. There's a lot of media attention around the whole area yesterday, and it's carried on this morning. So in terms of banks, different banks will have different policies, and generally these loans are going out in keeping with their general commercial terms, and some of the bank's headline do have commercial terms which state that personal guarantees must be taken on all occasions. And I can't speak for them whether they're reviewing that or not. I know there has been a difference in their approach by some banks in terms of whether they take it or not. There's a reason for it in terms of some companies, and so is that the bank would have access to assets that are held outside the limited company. But there's a general view, which obviously is held by many people, that it isn't in keeping with the spirit of the scheme that's been rolled out. So it probably is being reviewed at the moment. But there is a difference. Not all banks will ask for those personal guarantees.
Okay. In the back of my mind, I also had, obviously there's been designated banks who are sort of looking after the loan schemes for government through British Business Bank. There are a number of banks in Northern Ireland who aren't designated. Any answers for, I know it's not in your territory, but any answers for what do those guys do? Or what might they do?
Well I understand that that any banks who are not accredited through the scheme are working very hard to be partnered into the scheme, and hopefully that will happen reasonably quickly. I know that the suggestion is that if you can't access the scheme through your own bank, then you should look to another. But to be realistic in where we are and the circumstances we're under, like I know we ourselves are flooded with applications for funding requests. And if we have another bank, a customer of another bank comes along and says, look, can't I access it through my own bank? So I was wondering, can you guys help me out? I have to say our priority is going to be our own customers, and it's going to be difficult to get to that. So the timeline is probably not going to work. But I'd point out, Gary touched on it earlier on. There are other avenues to finance bar the CBIL scheme. And I think those need to be looked at in with your own bank. You know, there's relief of terms can be extended. There's extensions and facilities can be extended. There's lots of things that you can do with your own bank outside the CBILS scheme. And it does worry me a little bit. There's an absolute fixation on CBILS as the only avenue of support, and it's not. There are plenty of customers who can avail of support through their own bank without actually accessing the scheme. And I think that's important to remember.
Okay. I don't know if we've got anybody here that can actually answer this question, but there's a question here in terms of if we're furloughing employees and a number of our INI grants, for example, Invest in I grants are predicated on our number of employees that we have, will that affect our grants? I imagine not, because they're still employed by the company, right?
It shouldn't. Yeah, it shouldn't do, because their status doesn't change. They're still employees. They're just not working.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, John, and I think your answer and your analysis is absolutely correct, but that's probably one we could actually relay back to InvestNI, and they might be able to just issue a communication to companies to clarify that point.
Yeah, so we can definitely do that. From a bank, maybe British Business Bank or Danske Bank, have the grant the CBILS thing started? If any, do you know if anything's actually been paid out yet? I think that was a key question here.
I suppose I can cover and Susan can come in as well, but I know from our point of view that we have several applications tracking through. Drawdown, I'm not sure that we actually have one drawn down yet, but there is certainly one or two at point of drawdown, but there's at least eight of them are through and approved, but we have quite a number that are sitting just ready to approve. So we expect that to accelerate over the next few days. Susan maybe would know if someone from her point of view, if someone been drawn down at this stage?
Yeah, from an NI point of view, I'm not sure we've any money actually out the door, but certainly across the water, facilities have been drawn. So you know, I think if we're reasonable about this, the scheme went live on Monday. You have to give the lenders a bit of time to get up to speed and get to grips with the process, and they're doing their absolute best with that. So, as Robert said, lots and lots of applications in the pipeline, and they will hopefully move through to drawdown, you know, in the very short term.
Okay. There's one here about investment, and sorry, I know, Michael, you touched on the importance of sort of not just focusing on the next few weeks, but the next few months outside of that as well. So as we know, there are a number of investments which were about to drop, which have been put on hold, just basically through uncertainty. So there's basically a question here about, would that be a key reason for CEPLs being granted to that company?
I saw that question in the chat, John, and I'm glad you came to it. I can't speak for any bank, obviously, but my assessment would be quite likely not. And here's how I reach that conclusion. Number one, I presume we're talking about an equity investment. So presumably pre-coronavirus, debt facilities weren't available to that business. Otherwise, they obviously would have taken debt finance rather than equity finance, simply on a commercial choice basis. So the overarching test for the bank will still remain. Was the business viable and profitable pre-coronavirus? If the answer to that is yes, and the business can point to a significant interruption in its business caused by coronavirus, then it should be in line for eligibility under the CBIL schemes, subject to the bank getting comfortable that there is a viable business plan in place. So the disappearance of an equity investment, I would struggle to see how that would actually of itself meet the criteria as I understand them.
Okay.
Yeah, if I could just add to that, that's well covered, Michael, and the asset test of the bank is this pre, I suppose 16th of March is the watershed, I suppose. So it's the position of the business pre that. That will be the context and how the bank would view it going forward.
John, can you just one point in terms of trying to speed up the process and help get the money out the door quicker. I'm sure Robert will back me on this. It's just a case of, as applications come in, that they are packaged the best way they possibly can be, and even encourage businesses to engage with their accountants and advisors so that the information they're actually submitting is of good quality from the outset, and that will help speed things up when it goes into the bank.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And listen, we know time is of the essence here. We don't want a full-blown business plan in terms of the growth of the company. This is all about crisis management and getting through for the next number of months. Any bank will absolutely ask that the business takes some account of the cash impact on its business over the next probably 6 months at least anyway, and try and get that tabulated in some sort of a form with assumptions to it as to how we work our way through that. So focus on the cash. A sophisticated business plan is not required unless you're a complex business, would be my view.
Okay, adding on to that, there's a specific question here, and based on the comments up until now, is it a waste of time applying for CEPLs if you're not profit making?
Well, I suppose I can cover that, and some of the other guys can come in behind me. But the key thing for the bank looking at it, the viability test. So there is a viability test there. So is the business viable pre-COVID, and if was it profitable? Was it a blip where the profits disappeared? Is the track record reasonably well? I wouldn't rule it out, but if it has been struggling, let's say for a number of years or a period of time, and then there's a big, big question mark over the viability. But if the business has, by all accounts, been trading reasonably well, has hit a blip, and profits disappeared for a short period of time, then arguably it may well still be viable. And it is worth looking at it with their lender.
I would just add a comment on that, John. I would agree with Robert's analysis there. Thinking about the particular circumstances, many of the catalyst community where they're in a growth phase, probably haven't reached profitability yet, but probably can make a case to say that they were directionally heading that way. I think it's worth a go, but I think, as Robert is indicating, it's probably going to be a more difficult one for the bank to make a decision on. So I wouldn't categorize it as a complete waste of time.
Okay, good. I think that's a good answer. Maybe one for, again, Michael and Carolyn, just from previous experiences. Question is, so what should companies who are less than 3 years old really are in startup phase, or maybe pre-revenue or low revenue, but certainly not profitable? What should they be focusing on right now? What are the key things that they should be doing?
I'll pick up on that one first, John, if that's okay. And these are going to be blindingly obvious points, but I think they're probably the few levers that companies in that category probably have. Reduce spend as much as possible. Adopt or try to figure out a business plan that helps you survive through the next 6 to 9 months, because that is probably the time scale it's going to take for the world to reach some level of economic stability. At what level that stability at is still difficult to prejudge, and may well be the time scale within which people like angel investors may need to get comfortable before they start making angel investments again. There are very few companies in that category that I'm aware of who aren't looking at significant pay reductions right now, immediately, or full-time layoffs to cut their cloth for these current circumstances. Those are draconian measures, but there are some of the few levers that are available to companies in that category.
Okay, thank you. Carolyn, anything that you could add to that?
The only thing I would add is reach out to your current bank, just in terms of, again, what some of the guys talked about what you were doing previously and where you were heading. And there is a little bit of talk around overdrafts and making them a little bit more accessible, a little bit less interest, that kind of thing. Until some of these companies try it, I just don't know what the reaction is going to be. But there has been a bit of talk about that in the last week. So it's reach out to your current banking institutions and see if there's any way of sort of bridging the gap. So that would be the only other thing to add.
Okay. There's a couple, we're sort of getting to the end of, we're sort of over a bit of time, but I want to get a couple more questions answered, if you guys are okay with that, before we close up. I would say that there are some specific questions here for Catalyst. So those guys who are on the webinar, please contact us afterwards. We're here to help and support you. So drop me an email, drop any of the your contacts an email, and we will get those questions that you've had on here answered succinctly and as fast as we possibly can. There's a few more here on furloughed workers as well. So I think there's some nervousness about furloughing employees. What commitment do they have to the company? Can they run off and get another job? And secondly, can they involve themselves in consultancy services for third party companies outside of the companies they're actually working for? Maybe that's one for Ashley again.
Yeah, the restriction on work and the way the guidance is worded is working for the actual employer. So, for example, if someone's furloughed and they're only receiving 80% of their pay, there doesn't seem to be any prohibition on them going out and getting a job in Tesco, for example, to try and top up the balance and pay their mortgage. I don't see any express exclusion in relation to that kind of thing, provided they're not providing services for their current employer.
Okay. And then there's another question just relating to that. Sorry, go ahead, Michael.
Sorry to interrupt you there. I'm just going to address the other point that you raised there around concern about employees going and getting another job while they're furloughed and leaving their current employer. That is clearly a risk. I think it has to be said that is a risk in the same way as if an employee is in a regular employment situation, the employer can't stop them to leaving to take another position somewhere. I think it might also be worth touching on just at a high level around the whole process of engaging in an employee conversation, which may lead to that role being a furloughed role. I think I'm right in saying that unless the employment contract explicitly gives the employer the right to designate someone unilaterally, it is a matter on which employee consent needs to be reached. Ashley, you might elaborate further on that point.
Yeah, so the first point that you made there about somebody leaving to take up other work, you know, you can be employed by two businesses and two entities. So you may be furloughed by one and, you know, have a need to top up your salary and go and find employment with somebody else. So there's no issue with you doing that. You know, you don't necessarily have to leave one employer to take up employment with another. And then the second point, you know, that you made there about consent. Yes, you're absolutely right. So if you are communicating with your staff to deem them as a furloughed worker, you really should get their consent for that. Now, nobody is writing to staff. Everybody's either doing it through email or text, but that's enough, provided you have something back from the employee to say, yes, I consent to you designating me as a furloughed employee. That's absolutely fine. Yeah.
Okay. So one other important point here, I think, which has been raised, and that's for directors, company directors. So if company directors are furloughed and not supposed to work, does that relinquish their direct responsibilities? I would imagine not, but actually maybe that's one for you though.
Yeah, no, I understand that that directors are still permitted to carry out any statutory duties that they'd be required to do as a director. So, you know, you are permitted to continue to do that as a director. So you fulfil your responsibilities. You can do that and still be furloughed, as I understand it.
Yeah, I was on another webinar yesterday, John, where, yes, exactly that position was the analysis. But being made, no doubt, carrying out your statutory duties isn't the same as working full-time for the business in whatever role you fulfilled previously. So say you might have been the director of sales, you can still fulfill your statutory responsibilities and do things like attend board meetings. What you can't do is continue to fulfill your role as sales director. So there is right. Very definitely a grayness there. So that needs to be taken very carefully, I think, in respect of directors.
Okay. Okay, look, I want to thank the panel, Susan, Ashling, Michael, Carolyn, Robert, Andrew and Gary. Really appreciate you guys coming along and contributing and taking live questions. Yeah, it's very odd times, and you know, some of the questions can be difficult as well, but I think it's very, very helpful to all of the attendees who are on in very difficult positions as well. So I really appreciate you guys putting yourself up front and center to take the questions, as I'm sure the attendees do as well. Just to reiterate, we have recorded the session, so we'll, as soon as we can afterwards, we'll make it available on our website. There have been a number of questions from people who are involved in Catalyst programs or members or one way or another. Please. I know we haven't answered some of those questions because I want to get through some of the other ones, is you can reach out to us, and please do. So reach out to me or your Catalyst contact, and we will get those questions answered for you. Catalyst is moving online. So a number of the programs, we have been in process of putting those programs online. So they're not being stopped. So please check out our website. In particular, what may be of interest to some of you is we've introduced a new, I guess, temporary program, hopefully, which is working title Springboard to Survive, which is all about putting a panel such as we have today to answer specific questions which are particular to your company. So if that's of interest to you, to help you to work through this next really difficult period, please, again, get in touch. You can email us at, again, as I said, community@wearecatalyst.org, and we will respond to that.